the next 60 minutes. Fifi Box, in-depth, one-on-one with her pals. I spent
it with you. Hi, I'm Lisa Wilkinson.
G'day, I'm Patty Mills.
Hi, I'm Zara Larson.
I'm Samuel Johnson.
Catherine Kelly Lang.
I'm Rebecca Gibney.
This is
Boxed In.
Boxed In.
Boxed In.
Boxed In.
Boxed In with Fifi Box.
My guest this week is one of Australia's favourite comedians. No, that's not even enough. Humans. Also on his resume, comedian, actor, radio and TV host, producer, director, author. Pete Hellyer, is there more that I've forgotten to add to your CV?
I was going to say philanthropist, but I haven't. I actually don't do anything as far as I help nobody out. So I'm a masseuse.
Do you know what? You are a philanthropist of friendship because you're a wonderful friend.
Well, that's very
kind of
you.
And I am very thrilled to have you a whole hour, Pete, just in the studio.
Just us.
You and me, tete-a-tete.
I listened to Boxed In and I was like, when is Fifi going to invite me on Boxed In? And today's the day.
Do you know what the absolute truth is? Because you're not alone with that. It's a handful of my very good friends are all offended that they're not asked, but I feel bad. It's one of those funny things when you work, you feel bad asking a friend to do something because you put them in the situation where they've got to say yes.
I have the same thing sometimes when I do these benefits for anaphylaxis.
Yes.
And to be honest, I did the first one years and years ago, and I only did a second one like 2 years ago, and I'm due to do another one soon.
You got to really work on that philanthropy.
Yeah, I know, that's why I did not claim to be a philanthropist. I can really say the word. But it was always that weird thing of like wanting to ask somebody to do the gig, and they're fun gigs. You know, they're usually in nice big theaters, but you also ask them to give up their time, and then. But then people are offended if you don't ask them. So is that weird? I know exactly what you're talking about, but I'm glad to be here.
Boxed In with Fifi Box.
G'day, it's Peter Helly here, and it's my pleasure to be boxed in with my mate Fifi Box.
I'm glad you're here because obviously everything you do, the project, 6:30 weeknights on Channel 10 where we hang out as mates and stuff, but Frankie Fish and The Great Wall of Chaos, your new book, your new book for 8 to 12-year-olds, is that where we're pitching?
That's where we go, but if they're really eager readers, they can read younger than that. I've had some friends say they read to their 5-year-old who absolutely lapped it up. And I've had older readers from, 13, 14 and even adults.
A mate of ours, Brendan Favola, can't get enough of it.
It's probably pitched perfectly at Fev's age, to be honest.
No, you're right. But what I love about this is you are the father to 3 boys.
Yep.
And to write for obviously all children of the world, but to have your boys be able to read your books and go, Dad, love this. I'm assuming they love them.
Yeah, they do. The younger two particularly, Lee, my oldest one, he's 15. And,
cool.
Maybe a little bit too cool. that was one of the initial reasons that kind of lit the fire under me to actually write a book because I thought, the kids enjoy the project and they're really happy. I think that's a good show to be on when you've got kids. I think if I was still doing, Rove Live or Skid House and getting dressed up, and being or even playing Strawny, week to week, it might be a little bit embarrassing because, I'll be seen watching their dad wear a Leica in front of the Avengers or something, and that would be might potentially be embarrassing for them. But the project is like an adult show. As far as it's a grown up show
content wise,
and I'm not, I still make a bit of a dickhead of myself, obviously, but not as much as I have in the past, and it's a family show, families watch it with their kids or parents watch it with their kids, and it's nice, and a lot of their friends watch it, but it's still not really something that they can really embrace. Completely and just go, I'm going to watch Dad on the project and I'm going to put them on the iPad and watch it before I go to bed. But like, this is something they can hold, as far as the book goes, hold and have in their hands and read and have forever. Even if they don't, even if Liam never gets around to reading it, he has it. He has it there. And there's in the first book, The Sonic Suitcase, there is a dedication to the boys in there. But Oscar particularly loves it. He's 9, so he's right in the hitting zone, and he's very proud. And it's interesting because we're always proud of our kids, as you know, Fifi.
Yeah.
But to see that pride come back the other way, which is, yeah, doesn't it? When I do stand-up shows, they've never seen the stand-up shows. This is something a bit different. It's quite nice.
Stick around. Comedian and author Peter Hellyer is boxed in for the whole hour.
Boxed in with Fifi Box.
Now, this is, I like this. I'm going to have my Parky moment with you. This is very Parkinson.
Okay.
I want to go back to Pete. When I go back, when did the comedian in you develop? Was it you? Did your parents go, we've got a funny kid here? At school, were you the class clown?
I was. First of all, my parents didn't necessarily think that. They always knew I was creative because I always would be in my room writing. I've always found paper to be very, for want of a better term, sexy. You know, like. To have a pen and a blank bit of paper, I have always just loved.
I'm going to be grabbing that bit. I find paper sexy. You know, that's going to come back to get you.
That will be what I hear on the station in promos throughout the week with no context. I still love buying pens and notebooks in airports. You know, I'll go through, even though I don't need one, I still buy another notebook, and my wife does get sick of the amount of notebooks I have. But I was always in my room to the point where if my parents, you know, burst into my room when I was a teenager, I would be kind of more embarrassed because I was writing, you know, lyrics to a song or a made-up band that I would have, and I'd write like track listings of fake albums, you know, and I'd be so embarrassed by that. To be honest, if I had the opportunity, I probably would have whipped off the strides and pretended I was having, you know, a little go at myself. Just that would have been less embarrassing than, you know, like, you know, expressing my emotions on the paper, you know, like I probably was. So that was where it kind of came from. And then as far as being funny goes, I think I kind of kept it. My immediate family knew. My cousins, who spoke, I was speaking to one on the weekend, and she keeps on saying, she goes, we had no idea you were funny. Like, we all thought we were hilarious and you were the quiet one, and then all of a sudden you were on stage making people laugh. And you know. And then she said to me, she goes, for the first few shows I saw you, it was so nerve-wracking. And then there was one show I saw, it was a show called Snazzy, which would have been around 2010 or so. And she said, that was the first show that I kind of just looked around and everyone was just laughing. And I thought, I don't have to worry about him anymore. Like, he's actually, he's really funny. Like, I can let go, you know, and just enjoy it. So that was nice to hear. So I started seeing stand-up on TV and loving The Young Ones and Blackadder and Family Ties and Cheers and just loved comedy and started seeing some stand-up. I went and saw Greg Fleet at the comedy club when I was 15, and the cricket club and the footy clubs would have comedy nights. I'd go there and just go, oh, wouldn't it be great to be a comedian? And that was where the seed was sown. But I wasn't the class clown. As Jerry Seinfeld has an expression where he says he wasn't the class clown, he was the class comedian. As far as, you know, he actually worked at his craft, if you like. You know, and we had a politics teacher in year 10 who said, you can make a joke at any point in my class, at any point, as long as it's funny. And if it's funny, you get to stay. And if it's not, you leave. And that was perfect for me because it gave me a standard to work towards. You know, and the class clowns got kicked out, but the class comedians got to stay.
Now, what about you? You know, you are this wonderful family man. You've got your gorgeous family and your wonderful wife, Bridge. Busy home, yet you're able to do live television, write books, your stand-up show, Big Boy Pants, which is obviously touring. We've got the Melbourne International Comedy Festival coming up.
That's
Get your
right.
tickets.
Yep,
that's what I've done there.
Yeah, beautiful work.
Big Boy Pants. So where in your day, because people would see you on the telly and hear you and think, well, how does Pete Hellyer's day look? Like, where do you find time to do this, to write shows?
It's tricky. I've gotten good at compartmentalizing, which I'm not a good organizer, but I've gotten good to organize my headspace. Everything else is disorganized, and I've got a wonderful wife who's very supportive and who does organize a lot of our lives. But I just know that I have deadlines coming up, and I compartmentalize. Like, the Big Boy Pants was a good example because I knew on February 1 I was standing in front of 700 people at the Heath Ledger Theatre in Perth, and that was going to happen, you know. And I was either going to have, you know, have a show ready or not have a show ready. So the option is not really an option. You got to have a show ready. So I would you know, put aside the book, for example, which I'm working on the third book now. So I had to put that aside for a few weeks just to kind of go, okay, I'm in stand-up mode now.
Yeah.
And let's get to some rooms after the project. So I'll do the project and then I'll go off and do a stand-up show somewhere, like a 20-minute gig and test out new material and then do that for a while until I feel like, okay, I've gotten some gear here and, you know, there's some momentum going with the live show. Then I'll go back to the books and usually write at night, you know, get home from the projects, have some dinner, you know, have a couple with Bridge and say goodnight to the boys and then maybe write for a few hours.
Jeez.
And in the mornings, you know, I'll keep writing again. I mean, there is something else. We're working on writing a sitcom for Channel 10 at the moment, which where I'm, you know, I try to write again. My compartmentalizing right now is down to days as far as,
yeah.
Okay, the next 2 days I'm working on the sitcom. And then the next, you know, maybe this will come in the morning, maybe at night I'll work on the book with the project in between. Mm. So it is like I freely admit right now I'm at bursting point. I cannot take on anything else.
I'm surprised you took on Boxed In. I mean, I feel very flattered.
Well, I wasn't going to knock back Boxed In. I know if I said no once, you know, I may never get another opportunity. So, no, I'm in.
Boxed In with Fifi Box.
Big Boy Pants, I want to say, because I've not seen it yet, obviously. I'll be coming to probably all your shows because now I'm going to say I think it was last year, but it was probably the year before.
It was the year before.
It was the year before. Time flies. But when I went to watch you at the Comedy Theatre, best comedy show, in 2 years. I'm not just saying that because I know you'll think I am, but I know, and you know we've got lots of comedian friends in common, that was the best comedy show I'd seen in at least 2 years, and I hadn't been to, you know, many since. But it was so good, Pete.
Oh, thank you.
So phenomenal up on stage. I love, and I do implore anyone to go and see Big Boy Pants, but I did want to ask you, I've never asked you this, what was your first stand-up show? How did it go?
The first one, I was 21 and I booked in, like we all did back then at that time, to do a 5-minute spot at the ESPY in St Kilda in the Gershwin Room. And that was, they used to have these monster Sundays where it would start at 2 o'clock and go to about 6 or 7 o'clock, and mainly new comics with, you know, a couple of more experienced guys would come in and, you know, do a spot. You'd have an experienced MC, maybe an experienced headliner. But everyone else was like newish to like first days or, you know, first, you know, times on stage to, you know, a year or two. And I booked in. I didn't tell anyone. I thought, I'm just going to go this and do it by myself. I don't want to get a false economy from the audience. I want to know if I can do this. But the night before, on a Saturday night, I had my one of my good friends, 21st, Scotty Laughleader. And I was doing the speech and nailed the speech. I just smashed it. So I'd had a few beverages and just thought, you know, I'm riding high. Just told everyone, you know, tomorrow I start my life as a stand-up comedian. And everyone was like, what? And like, so in the end, I had about a dozen mates come down and watch me. And it went really well. In fact, on the One Hot Mess, which is a show you're talking about, which is on DVD and I guess download, one of the extras is my first gig. You can actually watch it. Yeah, I had it on
VHS.
That's great. So, and I've always had this memory of just like smashing it. Now, I didn't quite smash it, but it was quite a good first gig. Like if your first gig, you can get up and get a couple of laughs. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, like. You just don't want to completely bomb. So it went quite well. I remember walking to the microphone stand, not knowing which joke I was going to start with and end with.
A
joke about fish and chips and another joke about phone sex. And I started with the fish and chips joke in the end, which worked really well, and I still do it occasionally, and ended with the phone sex joke, which was, okay and fine and got a good laugh to get out on. But I remember thinking I'd get the microphone, and I went to get the microphone out, and it wouldn't come out. And I remember thinking, like, later on, I was like, you're really yanking. I'm not sure why. The microphone, I was really yanking on that thing. When I watched back on the video, it was the most timid little effort to get the microphone stand out. I just stood there. I had a water bottle in my hand, a half-drunk water bottle that I just had in my hand. I was like, why don't you leave the water bottle backstage? Like, I'm just standing there. I didn't move around much. You know, it's really kind of weird. And then I had a better second gig. And then a third gig, all at the ESPY, was horrible. It was horrible. I tried some crowd work. I was like, where are you from? And they're like, I'm from Mentone. Oh, don't know where that is. All right. What do you do for a living, buddy? I'm a plumber. Oh, good. Cool. All right. I had no arsenal, you know, and that's what over the years with comedy, you build up this arsenal of material that you can almost deal with so many situations. But when you, you know, when you're three gigs in, you have, you have, you know, 5 minutes of material, you know, and some of it's not even good.
You are, I can say this for a fact, not, and friendship aside, you are laugh every minute funny. When One Hot Mess was incredible. I can't wait to see Big Boy Pants. I'm serious, Pete. Up there, I saw Seinfeld last year and I saw Reese Darby and Pete Hellier were with those two. You were that funny.
Thank you very much. And I'm really stoked with Big Boy Pants. I think I've backed up One Hot Mess with a really, really funny show. And I can't wait for you to see it.
I can't wait. And Frankie Fish and
the Great Wall of Chaos.
Pete, so good having you boxed in with me.
Thanks for plugging all those things for me, Fifi.
My pleasure.
Boxed in with Fifi Box.